Deuteronomy chapter 5. Moses summoned all Israel and said, "Hear, O Israel, the decrees and laws I declare in your hearing today. Learn them and be sure to follow them. The Lord our God made a covenant with us at Horeb. It was not with our fathers that the Lord made this covenant, but with us, with all of us who are alive here today. The Lord spoke to you face to face out of the fire on the mountain. At that time, I stood between the Lord and you to declare to you the word of the Lord because you were afraid of the fire and did not go up the mountain."
Any comments, first five verses?
Yeah.
Anything unusual about the statements?
That went fast.
Huh?
That went fast.
That was fast.
I have a comment.
Yes.
Three. Adonai did not make this covenant with our fathers, but with us. With us. Who are all of us here alive today? That's personal. All this stuff.
Now that's very important to pay attention to. By the way, you know, we know this very famous Jewish phrase because it's written within their prayer file. And it says, Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu Hamad. This is the first time Shema, O Israel, shows up in the book of Deuteronomy. Did you notice that?
I didn't.
Here! Or Israel, the statutes, the laws, the commandments of the Lord your God. First thing first. All right? So the first thing he tells them to do, I want you to hear, O Israel. I went through the definitions of statutes, went through the definitions of judges, and the word judgment rather. So in one way, when you stop and think about this, the song, which we do have, I have nothing against, by the way, of that Shema Yisrael. That's a very good one. We'll cover that next week, hopefully. Nonetheless, is that the first thing that God wants you to do through what Moses is speaking now, I want you to hear the statutes and the judgments. Then it continues on. Why? That you may learn from those statutes and from those judgments, and you may, one more thing,
observe,
do, act on, respond on. Why is he so important for us? Why is it important at this point in time he is saying, I want you to do this?
Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 6. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol in the form of anything in heaven above, or in the earth beneath, or in the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of the fathers to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing love to 1,000 generations of those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not hold anyone guiltless who misuses his name. Observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy, as the Lord your God has commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your manservant or maidservant, nor your ox, your donkey, or any of your animals, nor the alien within your gates, so that your manservant and maidservant may rest as you do. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. Honor your father and your mother, as the Lord your God has commanded you, so that you may live long, and that it may go well with you in the land the Lord your God has given you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not give false testimony against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife. You shall not set your desire on your neighbor's house or land, his manservant or maidservant, his ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. These are the commandments that the Lord proclaimed in a loud voice to the whole assembly there on the mountain from out of the fire, the cloud, and the deep darkness. And he added nothing more. Then he wrote them on two tablets of stone and gave them to me.
In Judaism, they list the Ten Commandments in a differently. In Judaism, they list the first one as, I am the Lord your God. That's the first commandment. The second commandment, they combine together. That is what we call the second commandment. And you should have no other God before me, as into one. Now, I am the Lord, I am Yahweh, your Elohim, is not a command. It's a statement. All right? So in a lot of ways, the Christian world has it correct. Because the first commandment is not that. What is the first commandment? You have no other Elohim before me. Now, what does that mean? What does the word Elohim mean? We know it means a plurality of powers. Any plurality of authorities. Any plurality of strengths. Correct? That's what the word Elohim means. All right. So we go on to the next one, and he says, it's an interesting word in Hebrew. You will have no other God before me. Well, that word before is more closely translated as above me. So, you know, when we read here, and you start book of Joshua at the very end, he says, put aside those idols, those Elohims, put them away. They have got them above and not beneath. Okay, so that's why there's no other, you'd have no other Elohim other than God. And why Shechem, we talked about today, and that's where Jacob made an altar. And this is to the El of Elohe Yisrael, the God of Israel. Okay? So we're coming in here. Now, the next commandment is what?
Not making any idols or images.
I went too exclusively on detail in that, didn't I? The last book, chapter 4. So I don't necessarily go through it, but I do want to make a comment about this particular section. Because I have to use an example. And I'm not going to use you as an example. I'm going to use myself as an example. All right? So you can get a picture here. When it comes, when you have another Elohim that is above the eternal God, then what takes place? He says very clearly, I'm going to read this in this translation. You shall not make for yourself any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in the heaven above, or in the earth beneath, or that is in the waters under the earth. You shall not bow down to them, nor serve them, for I am the Lord your God, a jealous God, visiting the iniquities of the fathers and of the children to the third and fourth generation. What's the last statement? That hate me. We'll explain the third and fourth generation in a minute. When you have whether it's within your mind or heart or soul, another Elohim that is above, guess what? God says, you hate me, and I'm going to visit you. Why? Because you made an agreement with him that you will have no other. You made a covenant with him. And he said, no, not only am I going to visit you, I'm going to pass that hatred you have toward me, your children's going to suffer from it, and your grandchild's going to suffer it, and unto the great-grandchild's going to suffer unto it, if you hate me. So how do you hate the Lord? Don't have anything else besides him. All right? That's a real simple, wait, have you looked at the law that way before? Because that's what it's telling us, right? When I read this thing some time ago, it says, what does that got to do with hate? Okay, so a person quits. God says, no, that's hatred toward me. You despise me. You despise my word. You despise my statutes. You despise my judgments. You despise me. Therefore, since you said you would do it and you're not, I'm going to visit you. I'm going to visit your son. I'm going to visit your grandson. And I may go all the way to the third. Four. Yes.
How is this connected to what Messiah said about if you do not hate your father and mother, you have no part of me?
You have an answer?
It's a matter of preference. He's not wanting you to love your mother, your father, or your daughter or son over him, as he's saying. But yet he commands us to love them and honor them in their place, give them honor, and to love them,
right.
But not over him. It's a matter of
right.
Preference.
That's the elevating. Elevating your father or your mother over or above.
Does this relate to the when God says that he loves Jacob and hates Esau?
Same relationship.
Same relationship, putting Esau above Jacob?
Putting Esau? No. Putting Jacob above Esau.
Right.
That's
not,
what bold,
not putting.
Not like we think of the human emotion of hatred. Biblically speaking, ritual hatred does not mean like we think of hate and anger. It means, I want nothing to do with you. I'm not going to bless you. I'm not going to be part of your life. You may not want to go to war with God, but hatred biblically does not mean an emotional feeling of rejection. Hatred has to do, in our English language now, has to do with preference. All right? I'll bless those that bless you, and I will what?
Curse
those that curse you. All right, now let's go on the third and fourth generation here for a moment. So I'm going to use myself as an example. It uses the word thousands, you know, and I know that word is elaf, meaning clan. Meaning a family, because that's what he's addressing. Okay? My father did something that could have brought a curse onto me and onto my son and onto my grandson. But there's something he happened to him before the curse could be fulfilled. He died in the wilderness. All right. I was 5 months old and he was dead. So now that will not be passed on to me because I knew nothing about my father's response until I was 40 years old. By that time, it had no effect in my entire life. On the other one, he says now, very careful with the word, verse 10, but showing mercy to thousands who love me and keep my commandments. Showing mercy unto the clan, the family that loves me. It can be reversed. A curse, if you bless Jacob, and Abraham, you bless Abraham, you get a blessing. If you curse Abraham, you get a cursing. Your son could say, I don't want that curse. So I'm going to bless Abraham. He reverses the curse. He wipes it out as if it never existed. Does that make sense? That's what it means when you come through and that when you love the Lord your God, it will not go on to your son or even upon you if you say, Dad, I'm sorry, I can't go your way. All right?
Right.
That's why you have the book of Ezekiel.
Right.
You say the sons of... Huh?
Right.
Correct. You know, I got three examples. The old man did one thing, went against God. His son went with God. The grandson went against God. Guess who God blessed? Just the one. Okay? He reversed the curse that was going to come. But since his grandson decided to follow his grandfather's way, he got the curse. Do you understand what I'm saying? It winds up being an individual thing, and I understand this. But a family can stop a curse. A family can, it takes leadership on your part to change the inward part and walk accordingly. All right. Now, next commandment. Very interesting. We're going to go down to, I can talk about take your name in vain. I talked about that last week. But the very interesting thing about observing the Sabbath. That's one of the things you don't redo because it's commanded for us to do. How do you write that one? How does God write that into your heart? Why would he want to do that for? We can say, okay, makes sense. Know how to God, makes sense. New images, makes sense. Not take your name in vain. Of course, it makes sense to honor your father and mother. Makes sense to not murder. But this one about the Sabbath, why is that so important? Why has God made it so important?
I think one reason maybe is that this is the time that he sets aside for the appointment with him on a weekly basis so that we can learn more about the other ones.
And what's so fascinating is just ahead of honoring your father and your mother. What's a paralleling? How would you honor your father and your mother? What if they wanted to talk with you? I mean, you're grown adults. I'm not talking about children, grown adults. What if your mom and dad wants to talk with you? What are you going to do? You got this telephone, you know. Yeah, hi, mom. How you doing? That's a weird look on your face. I can't stand my mom. But you don't say that, but you look on your face, and you're very pleasant to talk with her, and just in mind, you're saying, I wish you'd just hang up. You know, I'm trying to hang. Okay, mom. Yeah, okay, mom. Is that honoring? She can't see. But guess who sees? God sees. Now, you don't think that won't be counted? You don't think God, remember, you crossed the river. He's telling them before they cross the river. Cross the river. So that's the interesting thing about this command. Now here is where we have what's called things have been added to a commandment. Remember, this is Moses' words, not the words of God. If you don't believe me, you can go to Exodus and read it. But we're going to talk about here. Observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy as the Lord your God commanded you. That's not in the original commandment. Right? Okay, so Moses is doing something. He's going to what? He's going to expound upon the law. This is his commentary. Okay? It's not different, although it's going to expound upon it. Like, I'm not telling you this. This is what the Lord your God commanded you to do so. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But the seventh day is the Sabbath to the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work. I've talked this about before. In our English language, we don't know a difference between the word labor and work. But the what's moratorium is work. Labor is not moratorium. You can labor. What does that word mean? Service, to serve, to help. To assist. That's why you, Moses, why they accuse Jesus of breaking the Sabbath. Every time the Jews were breaking the Sabbath, what was he doing? He was laboring. Okay. He was serving. And so that's like going with Daniel and Oriental left to do something, right? They went there to serve the families whose daughter died abruptly. Just to be there. As moral support and showing compassion and showing outward the man, woman he worked with. And no longer is she there. You know, I've had to do the very same thing. Leave work, go serve the person, and forget about it. I've done funerals on Sabbath. Bring in the law. No. Someone else had to speak, not me. All right. Someone else had to teach, and not me. Because it's more important to do what's necessary. This is a minor thing, but now continue on. He says, you, nor your sons, nor your granddaughter, nor your servant, nor your maid, nor your female servants, and nor, this has been added, it's not there in the commandment, your ox, nor your donkey, nor any. The whole phrase is not in the original commandment. It says cattle. Now why would Moses insist on putting the word ox and the word donkey to explain something? What was he explaining?
So that the men servant and maid servants wouldn't have to do the work either because they're the ones who use
the plow. Okay. They're one, you know, the donkey and the ox have no recognition of Sabbath. Yes. What were you going to say?
You were saying that cattle is mentioned, but not the others.
Yeah. In Genesis, I mean, in the 20th chapter of Exodus, it's not there. He's expounded upon it. He said, by the way, I'm just not talking about, God's not just referring to men and women and cattle. He's also animals of burden. Animals that work. Not labor, animals that work.
The thing that comes to me is he again has been with the children of Israel, and it's like if you don't explain everything thoroughly, they're going to find a loophole. And well, they didn't say donkey, so well, we can just go ahead and use the donkey too.
So we know Moses is moving into a spiritual concept here, aren't we?
Yeah.
He's expanding what is being said. Yes.
I was just going to say, you know, it actually says, "And the stranger in your settlements," which would indicate a goy, a Gentile. And yet, to this day, well, I know in my father's time, he was the Sabbath goy to the family who lived next door. They paid him sixpence to go in the morning and turn the light off and go in at night and turn the light on. Unbelievable, but they were actually breaking the Ten Commandments.
Not only just the Ten, but also the word that Moses was said later. Okay. Okay, now the other part's been added here. Now the whole section, a big section has been added here, and Moses is expounding quite radically and large upon this issue of the Sabbath. All right, what's the object of Sabbath?
Honor God. Peace. Rest. Talk with God. Hear God.
We all have the answer. What?
Rest.
Rest.
God called it holy and a day of rest.
Because he wants you to be
holy
with him. You can't enter the Sabbath unless you're holy with him. Now, lest the doubt's been added, this is the reason why there's always conflict. People say, well, Deuteronomy has a different approach to the Ten Commandments than the Ten Commandments. Well, yes, it does. It's expounded. It's enlarged. It's magnified. All right? The rest of chapter 4. That your male servant and your female servant may rest as you. Verse 15, the whole thing. And remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there for the mighty hand with an outstretched arm. Therefore the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. What's missing? Creation is missing. I'm glad you got that. I was wondering whether you're going to guess that or not. No mention of 6 days of creation. No mention of God resting. Because that's not the issue Moses is trying to address. What was the issue he's trying to address? For you to make sure that your ass, your donkey, the ox, the people you work for you, and that they have freedom, they have rest, they have restitution, because your concern should be upon not yourself. Your concern should be upon the people. Your concern should be on those things that God created for you as the blessing. Take care of them. When he says that man is to have dominion, it doesn't mean that man has power to do whatever he wants to do. It means that he has dominion to treat them as God himself would treat them. God gave us a Sabbath not for himself. He gave it to us because he loves us. He wants us to rest. Yes.
All of Israel benefits from Torah. And I'm thinking about other religions. God is serving us, loving us, protecting us. But let's say in the Arab Muslim religion, what do they have to sacrifice to God? It's opposite.
Yeah, because that Elohim doesn't want them to be his people.
Yeah.
That Elohim wants to kill them.
He takes from them.
Okay.
God gives to us.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I do have a question here. Verse 15 that you just pointed out, remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. This is, again, a Haggadic thing to remember the Exodus, remember the Passover. So is this in some way connected to that first statement, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, the house of bondage? Is the Sabbath also then time to recollect? Is it like a mini remembrance of the Exodus event?
Sure.
Yes, it can be.
You could argue for that, couldn't you?
Oh, yeah, that's really easy to argue for. But on the other hand, I'll also make sure that he says, because the object here for him to remember, for you to remember that, though, is he says, because your maidservants and your manservant, that's the issue. I want to make sure your maidservant, your manservant is not under bondage like you once were.
Right.
So not just remember Exodus and the Passover, but remember the bondage that you were under.
Yes.
Don't put those people under bondage. Don't put the ox under bondage. Don't put the donkey under bondage. Yeah. Don't put the things I have blessed you with under bondage.
Yeah.
You can have dominion over them. And that's not what he wants. The rest day, Sabbath day, removes dominion of authority in the sense of our rule with a rod of iron.
Right.
Okay? The full meaning of Sabbath came before Exodus.
I'm thinking about the persecution, the Middle Ages, down through the centuries, how Israel has been blasphemed. They spread the plague. They did this. They are the kindest, most wonderful people in the whole wide world. It's just, things that they've been accused of have just been insane.
Because their Sabbath, because of their focus on the Sabbath, that was always the thing that was stopped. Wasn't it? Pharaoh did it, the Nazis did it, or various people down through the ages, Antiochus Epiphanes did it, they stopped the Sabbath. That's the first thing they do, is remove the Sabbath from them.
I understand that one. Well, on the other hand, there's an also spiritual concept. How many Christians have been murdered and massacred? It's not just Jewish people. We're talking about even Christians who are murdered and massacred on the same thing.
Yeah.
We have to move this into another category. It's a whole lot bigger. I mean, the Holocaust is very present in our world now because it happened in our lifetime.
Yeah.
So we're aware of it more than anything else. Yes, but just a minute. Mm-hmm. We're not aware of what the Muslims have done in our lifetime against Christians. 5 million killed. We don't remember that. That's unimportant to us. That's not what God thinks. Yes.
Well, one of the things as to why it's been, the Shabbat has been attacked down through time, because just as what we were talking about, it clarifies two main points. God is the creator, and God is the redeemer. God is the one who sets you free. He's the one, the creator. So when you take that point out, you extrapolate that outward. Well, he's got dominion over everything. He has the right to say what happens here, what happens there, because he designed it.
He designed
it. He's the one who has the power to sustain it. He created it, everything. So then you take the second point of that. He's the one who redeems it. So he's not the blind watchmaker who goes off, sets it spinning, and then you never see him again. He is the one who's directly involved in trying to clean up the mess of people trying to run away from him. He's the one who's trying to...
And one more.
To set people free from their own bondage.
Set them free from their own bondage. If we are to be like the creator of heaven and earth, if we want to be holy like he is holy, if we want to act like he acts, if we want to be like he is, then we too must set free bondage. What is the atonement about? We won't go there today. He's the automatist to set free. Set free. All right. You get all of doing. We're doing okay, okay? We'll drop down to verse 22. I just want to point those points out about the law. I'm going to say something about 22 first. It's because I wanted us to look at it and say, now, Moses is not changing anything. He is not adding to or subtracting from. He is expounding upon it like the Messiah himself did. All right? These are the words the Lord spoke to you all on the day of assembly. And remember, Daniel said the thick darkness of the cloud. The cloud is dark. It is not white. That cloud that followed them was dark. It was not white. All right? And the reason is keep God in a mystery. Because if you don't keep searching him out, you'll say, I don't even know anything about him. But since he's in mystery, and human beings like mysteries, they like to go in and investigate things. What's the story behind the story? You know, he's a reporter. He has to do the same thing sometimes. What's the story? You care less sometimes, but at times they're quite fascinating. Go behind the story, behind the scene and see what's going on. And this is where line upon line, lift up that line, see what's there. That's what God invites us to do, right? Lift it up. See what I'm really saying to you. All right? And he added no more. Now, I'm very careful what I'm saying here, because I'm going to step on some toes. I'll read again. I don't mean to do so. But Moses is telling them, you made an agreement. God did not add 613 more to it. He added no more. And the reason why he added it in the first place is because of transgressions. What did he, if he added, he must have had something over here that he had to add it to. This is not new. He added something. What did he add? What did he add it to? Apostle Paul tells us he added it to the agreement with Abraham. Right? That's what it says. Book of Galatians. He added the Ten Commandments to the agreement that he made with Abraham. And he added it because of sin and transgression. And we say, what are you talking about, Paul? So what is he talking about? If God added nothing more, what did he do? What was the agreement he made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? Or especially Abraham?
Well, his offspring would be numerous, that he would have a large territory, and that all the nations of the world would be blessed through him.
So it's like one of those asterisks to the agreement, right? Bottom page, fine line down there. And technically speaking, the Ten Commandments is a fine line. It's the little asterisk down the bottom. Because our focus should be on what the Apostle Paul said it should be on. And this is a promise that God made Abraham, that all nations will be blessed through you. And of course, it comes at the Messiah.
Verse 23. When you heard the voice out of the darkness, while the mountain was ablaze with fire, all the leading men of your tribes and your elders came to me. And you said, The Lord our God has shown us his glory and his majesty, and we have heard his voice from the fire. Today we have seen that a man can live even if God speaks with him. But now, why should we die? This great fire will consume us, and we will die if we hear the voice of the Lord our God any longer. For what mortal man has ever heard the voice of the living God speaking out of fire, as we have, and survived? Go near and listen to all that the Lord our God says. Then tell us whatever the Lord our God tells you. We will listen and obey. The Lord heard you when you spoke to me, and the Lord said to me, I have heard what this people said to you. Everything they say was good. Oh, that their hearts would be inclined to fear me and keep all my commands always, so that it might go well with them and their children forever. Go tell them to return to their tents. But you stay here with me, so that I may give you all the commands, decrees, and laws you are to teach them to follow in the land I am giving them to possess. So be careful to do what the Lord your God has commanded you. Do not turn aside to the right or to the left. Walk in all the way that the Lord your God has commanded you, so that you may live and prosper and prolong your days in the land that you will possess.
You heard a voice.
That's a pretty powerful thing, isn't it?
And they said, we have seen this day that God speaks to man, and we're still alive. I'm not going to go to explain what it says there in the book of John, what Jesus said when he said, no man has heard the voice of God, because he had to be in the clarification of who he is talking to. We won't go there today. But I do want you to know that God does speak. And when he speaks, we can remain alive. Would you like to hear his voice? Moses did. Moses heard him talk. These people at Mount Sinai, they heard him talk. And they're still alive. You ever thought about yourself? Why were they afraid? Yes.
Do you think that one of the things that was getting at there is the same thing that the prophets mention, in that no one has heard, no one has seen? Well, obviously people had heard and people had seen, but the idea that people were not really listening to God. They were claiming they were.
Okay.
They weren't actually.
This is where we're going to come at, because what it says here, that God says, I heard their voice. And it says, by the way, in Hebrew, it's Shema, meaning with intent to listen. Today we have to say, I heard it, but I didn't listen. Now we have to listen, even though we had heard it. Okay. The Hebrew word means, you're not only going to hear it, you are going to hear it with listening ears. Okay? So basically, you know, the people there, they heard, yes, they heard the voice of God, but they didn't completely listen. They were afraid of it, terrified, it frightened, and it would have frightened them. I mean, it says even Moses was even terrified. It's all because of your flesh. But they all lived. And he says, you are still alive today. As Moses said. I drop down to verse 29, rather. Very effective statement. What is the statement? Oh, that they had a heart in them. Now, he's talking to Moses here. He's not talking to the group. He's talking to Moses.
Now remember, we'll go there today, the 18th chapter, because here is the heart of God speaking. This is what he wants. This is what he's after. This is what he wants to have take place. But it couldn't, because there was something missing in their heart.
The inclining.
The what?
The inclining.
The inclining, yes.
Basically that their hearts were heading in his direction.
Their hearts were kind of like, yes, I want to go that direction with men of Joshua. However, comma, I haven't got rid of all the gods. Okay, you know, I'm doing you, I want to be your God, and I want you to be my people, but I want you to listen to me and hear me, but there's something missing in your heart. What's missing in your heart?
The Spirit.
The what?
The Holy Spirit.
With that in mind, let's go to the 18th chapter here, Deuteronomy, because this is where it's all heading, or one of the things it's heading to. And we're going to 18th chapter, verse 15. And the Lord your God will rise up for you a prophet like me from your midst, from your brethren. Him you will shema. According to all you desire of the Lord your God in Horeb on the day of the assembly, saying, let me not hear again the voice of the Lord my God, nor let me see the great fire any more, lest I die. And the Lord said to me, why, what they have said is good. I will rise up for them a prophet like you from amongst the brethren, and will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak to them all that I have commanded. And it shall be that whosoever will not hear his words, which the Lord, which he speaks in my name, I will require it of him. All right. Now that's going to move us up to Messiah, right?
Yeah.
Okay. How did the Messiah talk?
Gently. Sometimes.
It depends upon who was going to listen, right? Those who wanted to hear, guess what? Soft, gentle, quiet, still voice. Those who didn't want to hear, guess what? He picks up a whip and spanks him. All right, so he must listen to this. And now what's the object? What was the object of the Messiah in the first place? What was Yeshua supposed to do while he walked this earth?
To show us God.
To do his Father's will. Draw the people unto God, his Father. Intercede.
Speak God's word. There you go.
All that they had a heart in them. That's what the Yeshua was to try to accomplish, and he did accomplish. The reason why you are here today listening to the Word of God is because he's affected your heart. Do you understand what I'm saying? Now, with that taking place, and he's affected your heart, now you will do, and you will listen, and you will respond. The Messiah's job was to lay his life down for the creation of everything that God ever made. Without that lying down, that laying down his life, your heart will be like the heart that God would say, oh, that you had a heart in you, that you would actually hear what I have to say, and you would live by them.
Because otherwise it just becomes, oh, precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little.
Because remember, when he said that,
He was angry at them because they accused him of that. Yep. So he says, from now on, it will be that way. Yep.
That's all you get.
That's what you're going to get from me from now on. So.
That's why Jesus said, he who has ears to hear,
let him hear.
He's always saying that, isn't he?
Over and over. And that's with the Shema.
Shema.
And so, you know, and like in the book of Revelations, to the church who hears, let him hear. You know, I'm talking to you. Now, is the words that come out of the mouth of Jesus, even in the book of Revelations, dangerous? Or is he kind of pleading? Here, you got ears? Here, what I'm telling to you. This church, I want you to change here. Rechange, or else I'm going to have to remove something. I'm going to remove that candlestick. And I'm in charge of the menorah. I can take that menorah and I can rip out one complete candle, the whole incomplete branch, and graft on another one. Can he not? It's pure gold. That's not a piece of cake to him. Rip it off. Put another one on there and you'll never know anything wrong with it. So the heart, and that's what the next chapter brings into, and the next chapter brings in very heavily, love the Lord your God with what?
All your heart
and all your soul and all of your strength. We'll cover that next week. I want to say something before we finish. Have I lost anybody today?
No.
Okay. I was thinking about that friend of yours, the one that's kind of new. He said, how do you explain to them that God got his own time schedule? This is the time schedule with God. And listen to me what I'm saying to you. God's timing for an individual person, and even a nation, but mostly a person, is set by how much that person, heart, soul, and mind, is responding.
Say that again.
The timing.
Right.
Where God can actually, in fact, change somebody's life is set by the individual person. And the individual person's his heart, his soul, and his mind. So I said mind, I meant might. What you do, how you respond. And that's why if your heart is connected to the Creator of heaven and earth by and through the Messiah, you're going to hear. Your soul's going to be moved. Remember I told you last week, the heart is what motivates you to do evil or to do good. Or to do nothing at all. I do nothing at all. Same thing. And not doing evil. All right. Remember, there's really only two choices in life, but I generally give people three. So they figure out which one they really should be choosing. But they think they all have a lot more. Any questions? I have a very interesting statement because that's the next subject matter we're going into, right? Sixth chapter is about the heart, the soul, and your might, or what you do. What you do.